So again, good evening to everyone. Tonight what we're doing is really kind of picking up. This is our third leadership lesson where we talk about leadership styles and leadership personalities. Later, Ade is going to come back on and he's going to talk about the I type of personality in that DISC model of personality styles and behaviors. But what I want to kick off with is really just this idea of leaders who go over and beyond the norm. I think it's probably true that most of us want those who we work with, our associates, our coworkers, if you are the leader, manager, pastor, CEO, or you're the team leader, you always want and require team members to go over and beyond, you know, to stay a little late, work a little harder. Don't just give me what I ask for, but give me what I ask for and some. And I think that's a great requirement. I think it's something that everybody should push to. But because we talk leadership, I want to remind everybody that that type of personality is one that should be shown in every leader. So tonight, what I want to kind of discuss is the idea of putting in the extra work. I may be preaching to the choir because most of you may have been already doing it, or maybe you think you already do it, or maybe you are actually doing it. But there's this book called 212, The Extra Degree. It's written by Sam Parker and Mac Anderson. Not sure if you read it or heard about it, but it's a great book, great read. And the principal idea in 212 is simply that at 211 degrees, water is hot. Water will almost start to boil. But at 212 degrees, just 1 degree more, that same water turns into steam, and steam has so much power that it can actually control and move a locomotive or a large train. Again, at 211 degrees, the water's hot. If you put your hand in it, you know, it's going to scar you. But at 212, it actually changes its formation and turns into a more powerful force. And that's the idea. The idea for us, you know, as leaders, that I want to encourage is, you know, to go to 212. Don't live life at the 211. Don't live life at the 200. But every leader should really kind of kick in to what is the 212th degree. 212th degree is when it boils. Of course, the boiling turns into steam, and then the steam can be used in so many different ways to power or to promote something that is greater. That's the idea. And one of the things that I think we really have to grab hold to is people will watch and do what you do. People will work as hard as you are because as simple as it sounds, you are the leader. And as elementary as it is, people follow the leader. Leaders who work hard often create workers who work hard, laborers who work hard, secretaries who work hard, sextons and custodians who work hard if they see that the leader is putting in the extra and doing a whole lot more. And so, you know, that's the first question for you. You know, what is it that you're doing that's over and beyond? Most of you, because you are a leader, you already do a lot. You know, it's already a challenge trying to balance out, you know, balance your time and figure out how to do work and the kids or work and the family or work and have, you know, your own time. But we're asking, you know, it's really for you to kind of figure out what am I doing over and beyond what I'm asked to do. Particularly if you're the leader, you know, no one's really asking you to do it as much as you're doing what you think is required. So then the question is, you know, what are you doing that's over the requirement? There's a quote. Forgive me for not knowing exactly who it is. I have some other quotes later. But he says that if you chop at a tree five times a day, eventually the tree has to fall. All he's really saying is that if you put in the work, something has to change. And the first question I have when we talk about the 212 is what do you actually do to prepare for what you're going to do? So maybe you're a pastor, maybe you're the manager, maybe you've started your own business, maybe you're, you know, writing your own magazine, maybe you're doing real estate, maybe you're still trying to figure out what vocation you're going to launch out in, you know, on faith or take the risk. My first question is, what are you doing? What do we do to actually prepare for it before it happens? Just this week, my wife and I had an opportunity to go to The Price is Right. It was the greatest. If you have never met my wife, she is a game show fanatic. So last week before last, on the 3rd, was our anniversary. So on the 3rd is when she found out that we were going to The Price is Right. Every day, almost every hour in between the 3rd and the Tuesday we actually went, She was online. She was researching the show. She read reviews on what people thought and what people did, how people got on. She watched the show even more intensely than she had before, looking at every detail, trying to almost give herself an edge so that when we got there, you know, she'd at least have a good chance. It must have worked. And I can't say that she was perfect, but I can say that when we got there, she used everything she had studied before we arrived. And the next thing we know, while we're excited about just being there, we hear Janelle Riddick, come on down. You're the next contestant on The Price is Right. So it was exciting. It was fun. It was great. And, you know, a lot of that is, you know, them choosing who they want. But we can't overlook the fact that she actually prepared for it. She was ready. She was positioned so that if it happened, she knew exactly what to do. And that's the question I have. You know, what are we doing to actually get us ready for what we're going to do instead of actually doing what we're going to do? You know, the time that you guys spend on the conference call, I think, is good. It's part of the investment to prepare. But even over and beyond the Monday nights that we've just started, you know, what are you doing in your vocation that gives you an edge? If you're in ministry, are you doing an extra prayer, or you just pray, you know, everybody does a devotional. Everybody in your church does a devotional. Do you have some time over and beyond what everyone else is doing? If you're, you know, in business, are you attending extra conferences? Are you online, you know, before you go to work so that when you go to work you have everything in place? What is it that's giving you that 212-degree edge? I think when we really grab hold of that 212-degree edge, what we'll see is our leadership will not only grow, our development will not only be exponential, but you'll see overall shifts and change in the entire organization. Now, we've got to be honest. I don't want you to, you know, be fooled. You're not always going to see that change immediately. It's not going to be the first day or the first week. For some, it may not be the first 6 months or the first year. But if you keep pushing, if you keep persevering and adding, you know, like that quote, just a chop every day, eventually the tree will fall or change will happen. Lucretius, who was a philosopher in Rome, he says, the drop of rain makes a hole in the stone, not by violence, but by oft falling. You know, the idea is that raindrops, one or two or three, aren't going to do anything to a rock. But if they keep falling long enough, it'll put a hole in the rock. I haven't seen that before, but I'm sure Lucretius from Rome said it. It's got to be true, right? Or maybe it's like what Jackson Brown said. Jackson Brown says this. He says, in the confrontation between the stream and the rock, the stream always wins, not through strength, but by perseverance. Again, you know, when you start this 212-degree lifestyle, doing the over and beyond, the extra, going the next mile, it may not be something you see immediately. But if you persevere, you keep pushing, what you'll see is everything around you will start to shift and align to the extra that you committed to. So in that book, 212, it gives you some areas that you want to, you know, kind of go forward and move in that extra degree. It talks about 212 degrees of service. In other words, how do you actually serve the people that serve you? For some of you, it may be, you know, again, coworkers. It could be congregants. It could be the clients that you actually have. But how do you serve them? 212-degree service isn't just speaking to them, but it's calling them by name. And then after you know them by name, it's being able to refer to their loved ones by name. You know, I know you, Kim, but how about Johnny, who is Kim's sister or Kim's brother? When I talk about Johnny, it makes Kim feel really good because Kim now thinks and knows that I care about what she cares about. It's the extra degree of service, going over and beyond. You have to also have what is the 212-degree attitude. The 212-degree attitude is simply being at a place where you actually do more in your mind than you actually do in action. I want to go forward, but Zig Ziglar, a very, very famous motivational speaker, development coach, he actually kind of speaks about this idea of attitude. If we could, I wanted to take a minute and listen to what he has to say.
A number of years ago, Larry Majors, my executive assistant, got a phone call from a lady in Birmingham, Alabama. At the end of the conversation, she said, Zig, She said, I believe this woman thinks she's got an impossible problem, but I believe you can solve that problem with her in just a few minutes if you will spend that time with her. I said, well, Laurie, tell her to meet me backstage. I'll get there about 10 minutes early. My schedule was such that was about all I had. Well, I got there, and I was on backstage behind the curtain on one side. She spotted me from the other side, and as she walked across the stage, I have never seen as much anger in a human being in my life as I saw in her. She almost started crying when she saw me. She said, oh, I'm just so glad to see you. I got this horrible job. I hate it. I hate everything about it. I hate everybody down there. I mean, you talking about negative nails, she was it. She said, can you help me? Now, understand, I've only got about 10 minutes. So I looked at her, and one thing I have learned, I don't do counseling, but I talk with a lot of people who do, in psychology, psychiatry, and the ministry. And they tell me that everybody who comes to you with a problem are not necessarily looking for a solution. I couldn't understand that for a long time. Why do they bring you a problem if they don't want to solve it? Well, I can tell you why. They want to tell you about it, you about it, you about it, you about it, and you about it. And if you foul up the deal and solve the problem, they can't tell you again, you again. They want the attention that goes with the problem. And every company just about it has that kind of an individual. They want the attention that goes with griping and complaining. Well, I looked at the lady, and it wasn't unkindly, but firmly I said to her, yes, and you know, ma'am, I'm afraid your problem is about to get worse. She said, what do you mean? I said, I believe they're going to fire you. She was stunned. I couldn't have stunned her more if I'd hit her in the face with a bucket of ice water. She said, fire me? Why on earth would they fire me? The inflection in her voice clearly said, they're the bad guys. I'm the good guy. Why don't they fire them and keep me? Have you ever noticed that people who are the problem never recognize that they are? They're in complete denial. They think denial is just a river in Egypt. Why would they fire me? I said, ma'am, I don't believe there's a company in America big enough to contain this much poison in one small spot. Have you ever noticed that when somebody is about to lose something they've been complaining about, whether it's a car, a home, a mate, a job, or whatever, when all of a sudden it appears they're going to lose them, it takes on brand new value. She looked at me and said, well, what can I do? I said, do you really want to know? She said, yes, I do. That's the reason I came to see you. I came looking for help, but you sure haven't been any help so far. I said, well, ma'am, I've got an idea, and I will absolutely guarantee you it positively, definitely, absolutely will work if you will just do it. She said, I'll try anything within reason. I said, okay, when you get home tonight, all of your household tasks are complete. It's bedtime. Get off in a room right by yourself. Get a sheet of paper out, and at the top of it write, I like my job because. She interrupted me. She said, that'll be easy. I don't like nothing about that job. Don't like nothing about those people down there. And I said, well, just as a matter of curiosity, do you work there for benevolent reasons, or do they pay you for working there? She said, well, I got to confess, they pay me. And I said, and you don't like to be paid? Oh, she said, yes, I do. I said, okay, tell you what you do. Open your notebook right now. We'll start our list of the things you like about your job. They pay you for working there, and you do like it, don't you? She said, absolutely. But she just stood there. I said, no, open your notebook now, and we'll get busy on the list. She just stood there. I said, ma'am, let me tell you what my experience in life has been. I've discovered that in 100% of the cases, no exceptions, people who won't take step number one never take step number two. You see, she had come to me with an impossible dream. Her dream was that nice Mr. Ziegler was going to solve all of her problems and she would live happily ever after. Well, folks, I got news for you. I can't solve her problems. I can't solve your problems. But I will give you some steps that I'll absolutely, definitely, and positively will work for you, as it worked eventually for her. I said, well, ma'am, let me tell you something. Unless you're willing to take step number one right now, it's been nice talking with you. She angrily opened her notebook. Before we got through, there were 22 things she liked about her job. Not only did they pay her for working there, they paid her above average. She had 3 weeks vacation with pay. She had a retirement program. She was in on profit sharing. She had health insurance, life insurance, and accident insurance. She lived less than 10 minutes from home. She was in on management decisions. The company sent her to 3 seminars a year to be paid for. She had her own private office and parking place. 22 things that she liked about her job. Now, I said, man, when you get home tonight, everything is finished. Get off in a room right by yourself. Close the doors. Change one word from I like my job to I love my job. Get in front of that mirror. And folks, I cannot say this strongly enough, but I'm going to try. The eyes are the windows of the soul. Look yourself in the eye and with excitement and enthusiasm say, I love my job because they pay me for working there. I love my job because they pay me above average for working there. I love my job because I have a wonderful insurance program. I love my job before every one of the statements. You will sleep better that night. You see, there's something hidden in what I'm saying to you now. When she says, I like my job, she's really saying, I'm grateful for my job. And of all of the emotions we can have, according to Hans Selye, the number one stress specialist in America, the healthiest of all human emotions is gratitude. I said, you go down that list. I like my job. I love my job, rather. That is a way of gratitude. You'll sleep better the first night. Tomorrow morning, when you get up, get back in front of the mirror just before you go to work. Get back in front of the mirror and repeat the process again with excitement and enthusiasm. I love my job because, and take the list with you. Because the reality is, you see, you will have started to change from a fault finder to a good finder. Some people do really find fault like there's a reward for it. They really do. Take the list with you, and you will be able to add to that list absolutely guaranteed. Do this every morning and every night, and you will have an astonishing recovery from this advanced case of stinking thinking. Now, I didn't say that to her, but I'm saying it to you. That's what it was. It was an advanced case of stinking thinking. Well, 6 weeks later, I was back in Birmingham, Alabama. I was doing a follow-up sales seminar. Now, the lady was not in sales, but she'd been listening to my tapes. She'd been listening to Automobile University, and she had discovered that everybody sells. Everybody who will ever hear this is in selling. Whether you're a school teacher, a civil service worker, a military personnel, an executive secretary, it doesn't make any difference what you do, you sell every day of your life. There she was at the sales seminar, seated on the front row, grinning so wide she could have eaten a banana sideways. I'm telling you, you're talking about somebody that was excited. She was turned on. I said, well, how you doing? She grinned even more broadly and said, Mr. Ziegler, I'm doing wonderfully well. And thank you for asking. She said, you cannot believe how much those people down there have changed. I got to lay it on the line, folks. You're not going to change anybody else till you change you. Everything.
That's Zig Ziglar just kind of sharing. And, you know, that sort of humorous. And maybe even extreme, but I think that's where we are when we talk about 212-degree attitude. It's about really shifting yours. But then maybe that's an exercise you do with your team or maybe with your family, maybe with your staff. You just say, hey, let's sit down and talk about what we like about what we do, what we love about what we do. Let's talk about why we do what we do. Because often taking that, you know, that extreme 212-degree step to really engage and change it and shift in an attitude will kind of, again, help change and shift your work environment. You want to have 212-degree mentality in leadership. You want to have 212-degree mentality in your kindness. Just go over and beyond. You want to have 212-degree mentality in your commitment, that nothing's going to stop you from getting done or completing or accomplishing a task. You want to have 212-degree mentality in your belief system. You know, take a stand. Don't kind of dwell in that gray area. Or on the fence, take a stand in what you believe and what your company's beliefs are, what your business beliefs are, what your church vision statement is. You want to have 212-degree mentality in your focus. Don't be so easily distracted. Do something over and beyond to stay focused. And then lastly, you want to really have 212-degree mentality in your perseverance. press on, move forward, and have a leadership mentality that I will not stop until it's over. I was just watching the Olympics earlier today, and one of the events, a young lady was leading literally by miles in her race, but she fell down. And after falling down, she obviously lost the lead, but she did get up and complete the race. 212 degree says, I put too much in this to let it go to naught. I'll definitely complete whatever assignment I've been called to, whatever assignment I've been given, whatever task or ambition that I have. 212 degree says, I'm not just going to stop at hot, but I'm going to push to boiling until steam pushes our train engines and locomotives of life and goals till they get to the final destination. We encourage you to have that same type of mentality. That's really our leadership tip for today as it relates to going over and beyond. We're preparing now for Ade, our walker who's leading us in our personality, behavioral training. And so, Ade, if you're there, if you could go ahead and start 6 in, we're waiting to hear from you.
Thank you. I really enjoyed the information on the 212 principle. That was really good. I want to talk a little bit about the I part of personality behavior. Last week we talked about V, and some of the things that you see with the I are going to connect with V a lot simply because both of them are extroverted. So if you could refer to the notes that were sent earlier, I want to start by kind of going over those because that's a great summary of what I is, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the motivation, the desires, even the fears and the emotional reaction of the I person. So first of all, the I person, and I thought this was a really good definition, people with the I style place an emphasis on shaping the environment by influencing or persuading others. And obviously the I stands for influencing, but the ability to influence or persuade. And that's what Maxwell says the definition of leadership is, the ability to influence someone. So this I person is most of the time seen as what we would call a natural-born leader. The interesting part here when it says it places an emphasis on shaping the environment. Now, if you remember a little bit last week, it's important that the D and the I both are what are known as extroverts, and they're both known as highly assertive or fast-paced. And the reason why that is when we talk about extrovert, it just doesn't mean that the person talks a lot, because you can get an S or a C in the right environment and in the right context among the right people, and they'll talk a lot. What it means by extrovert in terms of functional personality, it means that they are above the environment. They influence or shape the environment, whereas the S and the C person allow the environment to shape them. And that can be seen as a positive or a negative. It really depends on where you are. If you are at a sporting event or at a concert and whatever you're seeing, say it's a NASCAR race, and everyone around you is yelling and everyone around you is screaming and cheering for the person that they want to win the race or win the match, then that's okay to connect with the environment, to yell like everyone else is yelling, to scream like everyone else is screaming. But if you are watching Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson on the back nine at the Masters, that's not the right environment to yell and to scream, because there are different protocols in golf. In that case, you want to have a personality or at least exhibit actions that allow the environment to be bigger than you. So again, the I person, they are bigger than the environment through what they say, through how they act. And remember, that's good sometimes, and sometimes it's a unique characteristic, not necessarily a flaw, it's just something that needs to be put under subjection in terms of how to be a good leader. And so the next part of that is remembering that they may be impulsive, they might be disorganized, and they might not always follow through. A lot of times these are the folks that have a lot of great ideas, but they're not necessarily the ones that execute them well or follow through. They may be seen as convincing, magnetic, charismatic. They might be seen as warm, although they might not be the warmest group, but because they can communicate that style and they can build rapport fairly easily, they might be seen as warm and trusting. They are those that take action. They usually can work with the other styles, although they have less tolerance for some other styles than others. They usually get along with D's a little bit better because they want to see people get things done, and those that have a lot of energy and a lot of assertiveness. They have a lot of need for recognition. They want to work with groups. They want to work with people. And as you'll see on the right side of the disc, that would be the I and the S. These are the ones that have less responsiveness to products and performance. In other words, the I and the S, which is what we'll talk about next week, they're more people-oriented or people-driven. So they love relationships. They love to influence folks. They might get upset if they don't have an opportunity to continually influence folks. They are attracted to and connected to attention and approval, affirmation, even to the point where they will do more. They will do what we call negative attention seeking in order to get that affirmation or approval. They hate being ignored, so they could possibly be rude or try to exhibit a particular way in order to get the attention that they think they deserve. They do love those relationships in which they can gain valuable feedback, so coaching, counseling, training such as this. They love those types of environments. They like to be free to express themselves. They like, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago, those types of leadership styles, like democratic, you know, especially if they're not the authoritarian or they're not the person being delegated to. They would love to be in a group or an environment where everybody gets to share, because that means they get to share. Although they do want to hear other folks, they want to hear themselves because they feel like they have something to contribute to the conversation. Now, in terms of goals, as you see on the PDF handout, they love to have victory, but they're a little bit more flamboyant. They have a little bit more flair with their victory, and they love to celebrate. They do value friendship and happiness. They like authority. They like to be the authority in many cases, and they thrive off being popular. So many times you use the age-old high school analogy, these would be the popular kids. Maybe sometimes they would be the quote-unquote jocks, or maybe they would be the captain of whatever club, but these are the group of people that can get you to vote for them, maybe the class president. These can be get the people to get you to sign a petition, if you look at that particular analogy. So these are the ones that really can get other folks, especially those that haven't already made up their minds, to sort of follow in line with what they want to get done. And as you see here, they will need to learn how to put much of that energy that they always exude into following through, completing the task, making sure they research all the facts. Many times I's don't get along with C's that way. We'll talk about C's in a couple of weeks, but they don't get along with C's because C's want to wait and methodically and deliberately go through all the facts and the details with a fine-tooth comb, whereas the I wants to let's go, let's do it now, what are we waiting for? And as you might know, in terms of leadership decisions, sometimes you have to jump on an idea and not wait for all of the facts, because sometimes it's not a fact-driven answer that you need or solution that you're seeking. But sometimes you do need to research and study and do your due diligence before jumping into an endeavor. So keep that in mind with leadership, whether you are an I or you're looking at following an I to some capacity. They also need to learn how to speak directly and candidly, and also to stay focused for long periods of time. Now, we're not talking about a dysfunctional lack of focus. We're not talking about a deficit disorder. We're just talking about they're so excited and so connected to what the next idea is, what the next message is, what the next way to help people is, and they maybe want to focus on that. What's that 212th degree that they sometimes need to sit and listen to what other folks are saying in terms of, and focus on that so that they can get all of the whole picture of how to progress and to go forward. And the leadership style for the I is driven by their ability to communicate, their want to connect, and their ability to be the center of attention. So many times when you have groups, let's say, for instance, you do a workshop, you'll see the I jump to the forefront and want to be the team leader. Doesn't mean they have the best answers or any answers at all, but it does mean that they value the attention, they have the passion and the enthusiasm to lead and the willingness to lead other folks. Some folks are reluctant leaders. They're good leaders, but they're reluctant. And sometimes when you're reluctant to lead, people do not get the sense that you have the passion, the drive, and the vision. I don't lack that for a second. They have what it takes, that charisma, that skill set to be able to connect with people the right way. They're very happy. They're very optimistic. As we said earlier, they're fast-paced. That outgoing part is, again, they want to be above the environment. And sometimes they are risk-takers. Sometimes, as we said, they don't analyze all of the data. They just want to make sure that they have the backing of other folks and sort of the wherewithal to say, yes, I'm the authority, I'm the leader, let's go ahead and let's make this decision and let's create the solution. So one of the questions that they ask, remember we did this with D last week, that they're usually sort of questions or statements that they think about when they're dealing with whatever issue, whatever conflict, whatever church growth issue or company issue. And the statement that the I's make or the influencers make is, how do I handle situations involving people and contacts? In other words, how do I interact with other people? When I come in contact with someone that's an I like me, it's kind of easy. We have a good conversation. We have a little bit of surface conversation, then we move right into deeper things. But when the I's dealing with an S, they might not feel that they can get what they want. They might get sort of tired of dealing with an S. Even though it's another people-pleasing type of person, they might say, this person's not talking enough. This person's not enthusiastic enough. This person's not passionate enough. So be careful with that if you are a leader and you are an I and you're dealing with a D or you're dealing with an S. Just because they don't respond the way that you respond doesn't mean that they don't care, they're not passionate, and they don't have vision. It's just a way that you have to learn how to communicate to connect with other folks. Not only that, but I's or influencers, we talked about last week the greatest fear. And I believe the greatest fear of the I is rejection, is putting themselves out there, communicating, being enthusiastic, being passionate, and then other folks rejecting them or other folks not caring about what they have to say. And many times because they are very assertive and they are so people-driven, when people don't respond the way they would like for them to respond, it's sometimes for them is a reflection of rejection, even though the person, say for instance the person is a C, they're not rejecting you, they just need to hear more. The D person is not rejecting you, he or she just wants you to stop talking and let's go ahead and do it already. The S person is not rejecting you. They just want to see, how does this affect my family? How does this affect my relationships? How does this affect me long term? Another I is right on the same wavelength with you. But if you do the math there, that's 75% of the folks, if you're an I and have an I personality, that don't connect with you immediately, even though you're charismatic, even though you're funny, even though you're warm and you're loving, they might not necessarily connect. They agree with what you're saying because you're so persuasive and influential, but you still might have to do more and kind of understand the other style so that you can connect. And let me say something here before we finish this part. It's important to know that as we're talking about these, each one of them, you might see some of these particular characteristics in you, but when I talk of them and I talk about them in isolation, they seem sort of extreme or they seem like they're over the top. And so remember that when we're talking about the D, like last week, we're talking about the I, that each one of us is going to have a blend. So you might see some I in you, or you might be an ID, or DI, as they say, which is you have some D and you have some I. You might have some D, some I, and some S. And what that means is the brief overview of what an I is or brief overview of what a D is not going to give you all the insight into your personality. So maybe at another time what we'll do to help you is talk about blends and talk about how these particular personalities connect with each other so that you can see, get a full picture of who you are, how you operate, and how you can better function as a leader. Another thing about I is the emotional reaction that they have. And when they deal with this rejection that they face because the communication or the influence that they try to wield is not coming across the way they want it to, many times they feel depressed. Now, granted, it takes a lot for them to be depressed. It probably has to be a lot of rejection that they feel, but a lot of times they will withdraw and say, maybe I don't have anything to offer. Maybe I'm not as charismatic or caring as I thought I was when people reject them. And when they get in conflict, one of their sort of buyer's remorse questions that they ask is, do I feel accepted and valued for making this decision? Remember last week we talked about D, and they ask, have I been ripped off with this decision? The I's ask a totally different question. They ask, am I valued and am I making this right? Am I accepted for making this right decision or this wrong decision? And so it's important that we see the difference even there between the I and the D. But as I mentioned as an example, what if you're an I and a D? You might be asking both of those questions, and how do you kind of connect with making both of those questions and making both of those decisions in order to move on to where you need to be? Let me close out by talking about the basic motivation, the desires, the response to an I leader, and what I leaders need to learn. And this is where I want to kind of zero in the leadership part of it. So if you know an I or you are an I, how to kind of help you. So the basic motivation of an I leader or an influencer is recognition and approval. And you probably got that from what was said earlier, is that they want to be recognized, they want to be validated, they want to be patted on the back. And so even, you know, if you are from a church background, if you're in ministry, you see, you know, the scriptures where the dove comes down and heaven opens and God says, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. And so we see that everyone, even the Savior, needs validation, needs approbation, needs confirmation of what they're called to do. So as a leader, when I is driven by recognition and approval, you know, we all need some of that. According to Abraham Maslow, that's one of the basic needs in the hierarchy of needs. We need to be valued and approved. However, this group of people, the influencers, they're driven by it. So they think more about recognition than control or the challenge that a D would think about. Also, their desires. Their desire is prestige. Now, when I say prestige, I don't necessarily mean to have a high pedigree, a family, or a fortune or fame, but it's connected to that, again, that need to be recognized, that need to be valued. They also have a desire to be in friendly relationships. They're not just trying to talk just to talk. They're trying to gain a level of intimacy and get into relationships where they can self-disclose and tell people and share with people who they are and how they feel and actually care about what other people think about them and think about themselves as well. They want freedom from the details sometimes. Sometimes they don't want all the inside information. They're not the performance-driven at all. They're more people-driven. They do want opportunities to help others. So say, for instance, you have a community service organization or 501c3 or nonprofit, and you want to figure out how do we help the community. But I's probably already have their fingers on the pulse of the community. Probably already know what we need to do, a soup kitchen here. We need to do a toy drive here. We need to do a silent auction here. They already know and they're already exploring opportunities on how to help others. They also want to be able to motivate others, not just to give others a handout, but to try to figure out how do they help the others learn how to fish as well so that they can support themselves. They want an opportunity at all times to verbalize and articulate their ideas because they feel like they have something to contribute, they have something to share in order to persuade, convince, or influence other folks to better things. They respond best to leaders who are fair and are friendly. So if you are in the job environment or you're trying to network for your job and you work for yourself and you are an I personality, you want someone that you can build a friendship with. So maybe you all go out to eat and you discuss family and you discuss sports until you can build that relationship and then you can get into business. So a lot of times the I folks, they want to lead into what the main idea is. They don't want to just get right to the point because they want to build that friendship and they want to build that positive social involvement and positive social interaction. They also need leaders. So if you're an I person, this is something that you probably need at least to a degree. You need folks to recognize how talented you are, how much ability you have, what your skill set is, and that's a good thing. They want someone to reward them for risk-taking. And many times that will depend on who the leader is. So it's most likely that if you have an I as a leader and you're an I follower, then you can expect this. But you also kind of got to know that if your boss or your pastor or your whatever your leader is not an I, they're not going to always reward you for risk-taking. They might even reprimand you for risk-taking. So some of those things you got to keep in mind. Why doesn't my boss like me? Why doesn't this person like me? Well, because you're an I, you want to take risks, you want to be spontaneous, you want to share your charisma and your flair, but they don't always want to recognize that. They see that as reckless. They may see it as being a loose cannon. So just kind of recognizing who you're following will help you lead at a better capacity for yourself. And lastly, what do I need to learn? In other words, if you're an I and you're a leader, what do you need to learn so that you can better serve other folks? Well, first thing, you need to learn that time must be managed. So we talked about this a little bit last week, that the D person who is performance-oriented and performance-driven might see the I come in because they were on the phone with a family friend trying to help them, or they were trying to make another connection or trying to network. And the D is sitting there tapping on his or her wristwatch and the I saying, what, I'm here. And so for the case of working with a D or probably working with a C as well, the ones that are performance-driven, they're going to have to learn how to manage their time a little bit better. So if you have an I person that's a good time management person, that's a real great lesson to learn. Also, they need to learn that deadlines are important. Many times they will start, their creativity is flowing, their juices are flowing, but yet they want to be moved to another project because it's new, it's vibrant, and they want someone else to finish and execute what they started. Well, the problem with that sometimes is they don't have the same vision, the same passion, the same drive. They don't always see what you saw when you started it. So you have to be able to communicate and articulate that as an I leader so that they can meet the deadline if you move on to something else. Many times the I folks have too much optimism, and it can be dangerous for the folks that they connect with. Sometimes you make decisions without calculating. Sometimes in your ability to persuade folks, you persuade them, and when they are persuaded, you are happy with that, that's your approval, that's your recognition. But many times, eyes that are not balanced leave out some of the details that if they had given those up front, the folks would not have followed along with them. So if you're an eye person, one of the things you need to learn is to be less optimistic and more calculating in terms of making sure you make the decision that's right for your whole company, your whole church, your whole organization. And eyes need to be more responsible rather than being more popular. And so many times what they do is the popular thing, the seeker-friendly, the user-friendly thing, but many times they need to focus on, okay, what are the needs of the people that are following me and how can I best serve them, how can I best help them help me or help them serve the community or whoever our constituency is. And last but not least, I leaders or folks that are connected with us need to know that they need to be better listeners in order to improve one's influence. Now, they kind of have the notion that the more I talk, the more I talk, the more I talk, the more I communicate, the more I am influencing. But actually, the mature eyes and the eyes that are the better leaders, they take the time and the concerted effort to listen more so that they can know what to say. They're not waiting for you to finish or trying to think of what you're saying, what they're going to say next while you're talking. They're actually listening. They're doing active listening. They're making eye contact so they can know how to benefit you and know how to connect to you. So hopefully you gained some information from the I type. Next week we'll talk about the S type. Thanks.
I really appreciate that. Appreciate all of that information. One of the things that I always kind of get from it is very, very confirming in many ways, but then also convicting. Hopefully for everyone who's getting the training, you're doing a couple of things. I want to just kind of reiterate, the reason we do that personality identification and behavioral identification is so that you can figure out who you are. You know, what are your tendencies? Maybe you hadn't thought about them. So one, you know, think about it for yourself. But then, you know, if you're really brave, ask someone, ask a family member, friend, or a coworker, ask them, how do you see me? What are some of the traits? Here's some traits that exist. Which do you think I have? Then the other reason we do that is so that you can properly build relationships and have relationships with those that you serve and those you work with. Again, every leader is challenged and tasked with being able to properly manage what you have, not always get what you want. You know, you could fire and hire, dismiss or quit, bring in or let go people regularly, but that doesn't necessarily make you a good leader. You know, we subscribe to the idea that good leaders take what they have and they manage it well. And the first thing you have to be able to manage are the people and personalities that are around you. You know, we often stand on verses, quotes, and ideas that, you know, you treat others as you like to be treated. But you got to remember, that's not an act. That's actually in principle. I mean, for instance, if, you know, my wife and I, if we have the opportunity to go to maybe a buffet and I make her plate, I'm probably not going to put the exact same thing on her plate that I'm putting on my plate. I mean, we do eat some of the same foods, but for the most part, you know, there are going to be some things she wants that I don't want. There are going to be some things I want that she doesn't want. And so I can't come back to the table with the exact same plate because that would be, you know, to do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. It's a principle. Give them something that, give her something that she will be pleased with, and then I'll get something that I'll be pleased with, and then we can dine and fellowship and have a great time together. We're encouraging you to kind of do the same thing as you listen to this model, you know, the dominant personality being D, the influencer being I, and the others that we're going to look at, you know, before we end our training. Hopefully, tonight everybody gained some great information that you can put into practice as early as tomorrow. One of the things we want to do is really just kind of take a moment and review.